Great. Welcome, everybody. This is our special bonus book discussion for our amazing, wonderful, delicious, delightful 90-day immersion Tea Touch for You program. And this is October 10th, 2018. And we're here with a number of participants and Linda Tellington Jones, of course. The two books that we're going to talk about today are Spontaneous Evolution with Bruce Lipton and Steve B, whose last name I can't really pronounce.
Berman.
Brahman, thank you.
Berman.
And The Code of Authentic Living, Cellular Wisdom with Joan King. And Linda, you said, let's start out with a little bit of feedback, or do you want to talk a little bit first and then do some feedback about how?
What I'd like to say is that we're really having a remarkable experience. Many, many of us who are in this immersion sharing. And we would like to start, before we start talking about our books, actually, we just heard from Donna some really remarkable news. And let's just hear first from Donna about what you've been doing since the last online sharing Zoom session we did.
Well, the first night on Sunday, I tried the wraps around my lower back because I really think I have the MS sciatica, but everyone's ignoring the pain. All the doctors are ignoring the pain. They finally gave me a prescription, but I've been experimenting. And the second night, I did keep the wraps on too long, so I was overstimulated. But three nights ago, I started doing the wraps earlier in the day, and I also coupled it with the Beamer. And I have had three nights pain-free. I have not gotten up once except to go to the bathroom.
Fantastic.
It's amazing because I have pain all the time. So I can feel it in the background, but it's not coming out. I'm not standing up. I'm not crying. I mean, it's just amazing. I actually sleep all the way through.
And you said that you had gone once to talk to your MS group, your
yes,
support group?
Yes, I was able, because of the wraps, to go to the MS support group for the first time. I've been trying to get there since March. And I
because of pain? Was that why you couldn't get there?
Yes. I couldn't, I go weeks at a time without being able to leave. I was able to go in September for the first time, and I mentioned the wraps, and they asked me to do a presentation. It'll be in 2 weeks to the group and teach them how to do the wraps also. And from there,
fantastic.
I'll go into the Tea Touch itself. It's great.
Wonderful.
I can't tell you how great it is.
Yeah.
Hey, Donna, how long has it been since you've been without discomfort, did you say?
I would say for the past three nights, I've been totally pain-free in terms of sleeping through the night. Now, before,
fantastic.
1 to 2 hours, then up for 2 hours with terrible pain, then back again. Then when I started the wraps, it was maybe 5.5 hours, 4 hours. But starting three nights ago, I slept through the past three nights after I did experimentation.
And how long has it been since you've been able to sleep like that?
Since last March. We had four nor'easters, and between the third and fourth one, I got the horrible pain, and it has never gone away until really last. The last three nights is the only time I've slept through since March.
And where do you live that you get nor'easters, I assume, or wind?
Massachusetts. So we had a very hard winter. We have four of them. And they were also during, full moons. And I do respond to changes in barometric pressure.
So it's a, like a heavy snow. Is that what you were talking about? A nor'easter means a huge storm.
Yeah, there were four right in a row in that month.
Yeah, super. Well, thank you. One of the things I'm really excited about, we weren't sure when we decided that we would do this Tea Touch for You online, how it would come across. And what we're finding is because you're right here, you're not across the room, that actually we're getting way more, I don't know, intensity and clarity in the touches and in the what we're sharing. And I am just beyond excited.
I know, this is great for me. I have the strongest dosage of the pain medicine and it barely works. It just makes it manageable. The wraps let me sleep through.
Yahoo! All right, you go, girl. Thank you. So does anybody have any other short piece like that you would like to share before we start onto our book club? Because that's what we're going to be doing, is discussing the books. But we want to, those of you who are managing to be here, because we chose a really hard time because I'm in Germany. So it's too early for the Europeans, because it's just around 5 o'clock. People are still working, and too late for you all, those who work in North America. So it doesn't look like anybody else has something. Sandy, may I begin then?
Yeah. I actually, can I share something that I did on the plane?
Yes.
It was so much fun. So I was flying across the country the other day, and I started to feel very sluggish and my feet started to get a little swollen, and I was drinking a lot of water. So I stood up a number of times, and when I was stood up, I did the little All My Cells Are Happy song, and I did the lymphatic pumping, and I was picturing all my cells spinning clockwise and happy, happy, happy. And I felt so much better. I actually didn't even nap on the plane like I do. I was so jazzed. And
fantastic.
Yeah. So there's so many ways that you can use all the little tools that we are doing. Like, that's such a seemingly small thing, but such a big effect.
And it fits so perfectly. Every little cell in my body is happy. Every little cell in my body is well. And it fits so well with the book that we're reading, which is called The Code of Authentic Living, Cellular Wisdom by Joan King. And I want to read the back cover, because there are pieces on here. As those of you know, in the course know, I was turned on to the intelligence of cells in 1976 from the book Man on His Nature by Sir Charles Sherrington, a Nobel Prize recipient. And his statement that every cell in the body knows its function within the body. And I have been searching ever since to understand what is that, and why is it that we are so effective in what happens with this communication between ourselves and our own selves and ourselves and the animals we work with. So I'm going to read the back of this, which is very exciting. First of all, Joan King's writing blends science and spirituality, which is my passion, the blending of science and spirituality, becoming the foundation of her work in understanding how our bodies model the teachings of our belief. And the reason this is particularly significant is that Joan King was a professor in Tufts School of Medicine for 20 years. And then she had a turnaround. And but I'd like first, before I start with this, is just to read what Carolyn Meese has to say about this book and why we really have been encouraging you all, us all. Absolutely brilliant. Dr. King has made a courageous contribution to an emerging new area of science that recognizes the reality of cellular intelligence. Yes! I mean, thank you, Carolyn Meese. because cellular intelligence is something that I have just been intuiting all these years, knowing nothing. And we didn't have all these wonderful scientists willing to share with us, as they do in these two books, who are we all about at the cellular level. And Mary Margaret Moore writes, a refreshing, provocative book that bridges two seemingly separate fields, the scientific and the spiritual. And you'll see actually in this book and in Spontaneous Evolution, it's meant to be, it's out there. I mean, I have been getting this for, I don't know, the last few years. We had to bring this out. So Lynn Robinson, from her book in Divine, she's the author of Divine Intuition, writes, "This demonstrates the wisdom of the universe and the physiological process of the body. Read this book and be prepared to look at your life with fresh insight and wonder." And that's our mission, is about this 90-day immersion, is creating the world and the world and the whether the life we crave through the gateway of Tea Touch for You, with the intention of recognizing, connecting with that cellular intelligence. So, on the back of this book is something that I'm actually going to memorize parts of this because it's really important. Here is one legend. It's a legend, a Hindu legend, of how wisdom came to be hidden from all humans. Upon rubbing up against the legend, Joan C. King asked herself, "What if in all my academic studies of cells, I've missed the deeper truth of what I'm really seeking?" It was that question that led Joan beyond the academic search for the wisdom embedded in our very cells to the discovery of cellular wisdom and the journey within. According to an old Hindu legend, there was once upon a time when all human beings were gods, but they so abused their divinity that Brahma, the chief god, decided to take it away from them and hide it where it could never be found. Where to hide their divinity was the question. So Brahma called the council of the gods to help him decide. "Let's bury it deep in the earth," said the gods. But Brahma answered, "No, that will not do, because humans will dig into the earth and find it." Then the gods said, "Let's sink it in the deepest ocean." But Brahma said, no, not there, for they will learn to dive into the ocean and they will find it." Then the gods said, "Let's take it to the top of the highest mountain and hide it there." But once again, Brahma replied, "No, that will not do either, because they will eventually climb every mountain and once again take up their divinity." Then the gods gave up and said, "We do not know where to hide it, because it seems that there is no place on earth or in the sea that human beings will not eventually reach." Brahma thought for a long time, then said, "Here is what we will do. We will hide their divinity deep in the center of their own being, for humans will never think to look for it there." All the gods agreed that this was the perfect hiding place, and the deed was done. And since that time, humans have been going up and down the earth, digging, diving, climbing, and exploring, searching for something that was already within themselves. The author is unknown. And this is something that in our 90-day immersion class, this is what our mission is, to bring you to this realization through the science and through the spirituality of finding that divine spark, of recognizing, of remembering that divine spark in every cell in our body. And this is why I just love this book. I read books rather strangely. You know, this is because there's no Kindle version of this. It's really harder for me. But you see, I was just like totally drawn into her description of cells and how they function. That's not necessarily for everyone, because that's only a very small part. That's a small part of this book. Her exercises and her insights of how we can make a difference in ourselves is what this book is really about. And what she, I have these notes here. On page 13, I love this statement. Look at this. If you've got your book beside you and you haven't already marked it, I suggest you mark it. It's the first sentence on the chapter of What is Cellular Wisdom? And the statement, every cell in your body is a genius. This so supports Sir Charles Sherrington's concept that every cell in the body knows its function within the body. And that's also in the book with Steve Barman and Bruce Lipton. They have a fabulous description of the way cells function. This description by Joan King is very detailed and deep, and I really had a good time writing it down, but I won't remember it. What I do remember is that every cell is a genius. And I mark these things and I underline them. And so what I wanted to jump next to on page 14 is that much of each cell's activity is directed to communicating with other cells. Interesting. The energy waves that allow for communication and interconnection make up the expansive dimension of cellular wisdom. And that's what we're interested about. When we open ourselves to source energy, Joan King writes, we connect with cellular wisdom, for source energy is our link to the creative energies of the universe. And this is what we're finding with T-Touch, that what we can do in every 1 1/4 circle, at which we now know is a spiral, or we just keep it at the circle because they have two different functions as we see, or actually two different results. And when we start doing this, we connect to that universal possibilities of actually affecting our bodies in a totally different way. And I jumped then to this next chapter. The life of a cell is orchestrated from a central command center called the nucleus, located in the heart of the cell. How can we be aware of our life instructions, our blueprint in every cell? This is something I think will interest some of you, and not necessarily. So I jumped to chapter 2, and what she's talking about is how our neurons turn on and off, and how it's really important for us to actually mirror this, and in our lives have downtime. Because this is one of the beauties of this book, is how she guides us to make our lives more, I was going to say more productive, but it's much more than more productive. It's the life we crave. Neurons, like neurons, we humans need refractory periods in order to stay sensitive and responsive. Alternating active and quiet times is essential to living and exuberance. And I'm just going to share with you a couple, and then I'm going to ask you for your sharing. But I then in chapter 3, this is how I looked at this book. Neuroscientists like myself are most excited by recent evidence that the structure and physiology of the adult brain is continually changing. Plasticity in the brain includes physical changes in the dendrites through which neurons receive information. Most dramatic, however, is the finding that new neurons are continually being born in the adult brain. And this is really great news, because I can't tell you how many times I've heard people say, well, I'm getting older, so I can't learn. The physical changes in the brain that we explore in this chapter have exciting implications for learning and growth within us. The next chapter I want to just make you aware of in chapter 5, which is about stem cells.
Can you say what page, Linda?
Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry. Of course. Page 77. And 76 is stem cells, the portals to power. And on 77, what I wanted to alert you to, that's what really is of great interest to me because of the friends I have who are using stem cell therapy with great success. So hidden sources of power, such as the potential typified by stem cells, are present in our lives as well as in our bodies. Many studies in educational settings have shown that what we believe to be true about ourselves can be either a portal to power or a limiting barrier. We acquire many of the beliefs that we hold about ourselves when we are very young. And this is one of the things that we hope in this 90-day immersion, that we start to be able to go inside and remember our potential for ideal function at the cellular level, and that we have this validation of this amazing woman who's written this in such a wonderful way, and of this book by Bruce Lipton and Steve Barman that really validates this statement. We acquired many of the beliefs we hold about ourselves when we were very young, in the first 5 or 10 years. However, the discovery that stem cells are present in adult tissue can encourage us to re-examine beliefs we hold that may be limiting to us. The amazing potential for stem cells to repair hearts, kidneys, and other organs demonstrates that we do have the potential to generate a new belief system that can lead to a more vital, satisfying, and healthy life. And this book is just really, really supportive of this, being able to do the exercises to change your life. So I would love to hear from Sandy, how are you doing with this book?
I love it. I loved it when you said that this book, it's as if these books are written for this program.
Yes.
You know, because it gives new life and understanding for me of a lot of things. Like, I have of course heard of stem cells, but I haven't like really grokked what it is. I know that they're helpful, but it's like a thing. And so this, like statements like this, like hidden sources of power, you know, and that this can be a portal to power. Like the way that this book is written also, it's just so eloquently beautiful and expresses so much of what we're talking about in a way that feels very, very, very inviting. You know, like just this statement that you read, however, the discovery that stem cells are present in adult tissues can encourage us to re-examine beliefs we hold that may be limiting to us. It's like things are stated in a way that at least my brain can get, and I can actually feel my body respond to that.
Yes. And on the page before, on 66, there's the stem cells, portals to power, and there's a beautiful explanation of exactly what that means and how they function. I've had the good fortune to know several friends and some of my family who've been using stem cells very, very effectively instead of knee replacements, two of my friends, and really different. Oh, my goodness. So it's the difference between, you know, using the intelligence of the body rather than the mechanistic point that we can just, you know, make a mechanical part replacement. Very different. Any other comments before we ask those of you with us?
There's
I've got Sandra. Sandra's got her hand up.
Oh, sorry. I forgot. Eleanor, you're to do that.
Right, and we have to say apologize for Eleanor because she's on her in the air right now on her way to Cuba for a vacation with her honey Steve, her hubby.
Okay, Sandra, you're unmuted.
Okay, Linda, really quickly, you know what my, I don't want to say challenges, but you know what my situation is. And ever since I was a kid, I would always say, my brain doesn't accept what everybody says about me and how I get around and what I do. I could never accept it in my head. And now this gives me validation of why my brain would not see or recognize or accept the limitations that people said I had. And I never could understand why I was always like that. I'm still like that. You know, Linda, how stubborn I am.
I do.
Yes, you do. And this validates my whole life of saying to people, no, don't do that. Don't put that limitation on me. Don't say that to me. Don't bring that in my space. No, no, no. And I'm still doing it. And now I have written scientific validation for everything I've been doing all my life and not knowing why. Because I would say my head doesn't see me the way you see me. My brain doesn't recognize me the way you recognize me. That's not me. And now I'm like beyond, I'm in tears because I've been validated. And I can say to people now, they're saying to me at work, well, you're a certain age now, you can't do this. You should retire because you're at a certain age and I've been having challenges getting around more than usual sometimes. Well, you can't because you can't do this anymore. You need to retire and you need to stop. And I'm fighting so hard. And Kim is walking me to meetings and helping me out. And they're saying, look, you can't do this. You must retire. You're no longer able. And I keep saying, no, no, that's not right. Well, you're getting older. So, you know, when you get older, your body stops doing this. Your brain changes. And I just had someone say to me today, a friend of mine, well, you know, when you get older, your immune system changes and you have to get all these vaccines and you have to, it's, you know, she's telling me I need this vaccine and I should get this vaccine. And I'm just going to start talking this stuff, whether they hear me or not, because I don't believe that. I've never believed that. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's so beautiful. And when you think of what Bruce Lipton says, and I was going to try to get a picture up. Maybe we can get Tina Hutton to put it in the back. On our Facebook group, because I have a picture of me with Bruce Lipton at my first meeting with him quite a few years ago. And he showed me on his laptop the picture of one cell and said that, I mean, cells have like just countless thousands, tens of thousands of functions that we know about and so many that we don't know about, and that every cell has its own immune system. And that's what, I mean, I love this description. I think for you, did you read that first chapter where she really goes into the description of how the cells function?
And part of it, I'm still reading it.
Yeah, I write and underline and make little notes, and that's how I won't remember it, but that's how I grok it, you know, and that's how it will validate you. And this fact that in one of Bruce Lipton's, because he has a wonderful Saturday membership club that you can listen to, and he has just every week something really, really, really valuable. And one of the things that he said to me, he said to all of us, is that by the time a child is now 2 years old, the average child will have like 60 different injections in those cells. And we have no idea what they're doing. And so for us to think that we're going to get another injection, another introduction into this brilliance, genius of the cells, wow, it's time to rethink it. And this, the fact that this validates what you have felt, and that this validates our mission for this 90-day immersion, the beginning of creating the world and the life we crave, you know, through this understanding of the brilliance, the genius of ourselves. So
I'm so struck by the fact that people are stuck in this mindset. I mean, so stuck. I can't even tell you how stuck. And I'm saying to myself, why am I not stuck? I am so into this. This is such a miracle, and I can't make that bridge between their, this friend of mine is going to the doctor and she's going to get all these vaccinations and everybody I'm around says, I have to go to the doctor. I have to get this. I have to get, why are you stuck there? I don't know. I'm so thrilled that I'm not stuck there.
But well, this is great. And I think it'll help you in chapter, I think it's 5 in Bruce and Steve's book, Spontaneous Evolution, when you look at that's the part, that's the only part I was able to open today because I can't get on my iPad. I can't get back to my other chapters that I wanted to get to. So this is obviously meant, you know, for all of us and for you. So you'll see why they're stuck there.
Thank
you'll
you.
See. Thank you'll, you. You'll read.
I'm so thrilled.
And you know what we have to, what we have to do for that is hold the possibility, as Steve Barman says it so beautifully, hold the possibility for change, that they will wake up.
Yes. Absolutely. Yes.
And
yes.
Yeah. So
there's chapter 13, it's page 225. It's called The Richness of Diversity, and I wanted to say, bring this up because it really touched me. You know, we talk with in T-Touch about cooperation and the development and unfolding of cooperation and how that plays a role, can play a role in like day-to-day life. And the way that she speaks about this, I love this. And, you know, we did this earlier class, two classes about transforming chaos, right? And she talks about, it just opens, much of the conflict that threatens the world today has its roots in differences between people.
Yep.
Differences in nationality, race, etc. Yet judging from the way conflict functions in the biological world, diversity and the friction that it engenders may be a necessary catalyst to all evolutionary movement. What a statement. Creativity and growth. What? Like, I, to think that way, you know, to have that perspective. In the cellular world, evolutionary biologists tells us conflict stimulates cells to devise adaptive strategies to meet and regulate it. In fact, without conflict, the evolutionary shift from individual cells to multicellular organisms, the shift that made possible the evolution of the biological world we know, including human life, would not have even occurred. In the cellular world, cooperation actually emerged from conflict. To me, that is such a huge statement, and that we, it's not just about like thinking that magic can happen, although that can happen, like magical change, like harmony can happen. It's understanding that when we feel that conflict, when we feel that contrast inside of ourselves of how, like, I'm not feeling well, you know, some part of you knows something different. It's that cellular intelligence, that divine intelligence working through us, that something else can come from that internal conflict, that internal contrast. To me, that says there's hope always. From yes. Everything that's going on today, that there's still hope, because this conflict, this is what she's talking about, this kind of conflict. It's like, when I say that out loud, part of my brain is like, that doesn't make logical sense. And yet, this is this scientific perspective.
Well, and I think there are two things that I would like to say about that. One is a way to create the world we crave is through forgiveness for others who are different from us, or may, and for the part we play in it. And that's through the prayer ritual of Ho'oponopono. And that, of course, we go into in our 90-day immersion, and we're going to be looking, we're going to be working with that book eventually, because I would like to do one of these a month and to continue with this. So thank you for bringing that up, because it's really important. And Sandra, what I was saying to you is that, you know, when we choose to forgive, and the Ho'oponopono is forgiving ourselves for the part that we play in it, because we're all one, we're all part of this. It's not them or us, it's all of us. That's the exciting part when we begin to look at the universe as one. So thank you, Sandra.
Thank you.
Anybody else have something about this they'd like to add before we switch to the spontaneous evolution? Hi, Susie, I see you just joined us. Hi.
Unmuted, Susie. You have to turn your volume up or speak louder because we can't actually hear you.
She can't.
You had the computer issue.
Yeah.
We can barely hear you.
That's okay. It's not going to work. So you can, if you'd like to write something, just write a note and we can read the note. That would be super.
We can see that you're speaking, but actually can't hear the actual words. It's so, like, we can hear you very faintly.
So I can't hear at all. So let's go on and have her write something. So
okay. Could you go into the chat and type some things in? That would be really wonderful.
Okay. So I would like us to, I'd like to hear back from you after you've read more of this. You know, next month, I propose that we do another one of these. And see what people are getting from it. And this book, I don't have the book. Do you have the book, Spontaneous Evolution, there?
I just have it
on my iPad.
Does anybody have it with them? Because I don't have it.
It's
to
okay.
Show. Yeah.
Doesn't matter. We all know what it is. So one of the things that I loved about this book, I read it first 10 years ago, and I remembered only the chapter on cells, which is brilliant. Oh my gosh, the way the function of the cells is described in this book is really fascinating. But that's just a small part of it. And I love the stages in this chapter. I'm actually on page 94. And what they're talking about here is the difference between the Newtonian or Darwinian science of the past and quantum science. And it's brilliantly written. You know, I just can't put this book down. In the year 1543 is considered to be the advent of the modern scientific revolution. It was the year that Copernicus, at the end of his life, published the book, The Revolution of the Heavenly Spheres, and successfully challenged the church's claim to infallibility. One of the first issues that modern science had to wrestle with was simply, what is a truth? Remember, the science of the 16th century was a collection of ancient speculations that had been passed down from the Greeks and modified by Christian theologians. Science was confounded by the fact that there was no way to distinguish or validate a real truth from a fervently held belief. Consequently, the first task of modern science was to create a scientific method for assessing data. Essentially, the scientific method involves making observations and measurements, creating explanatory hypotheses, and conducting experiments designed to test these hypotheses. The results of the experiments are then used to refine the hypotheses so that they become more predictive of the experimental results. Predictability is the primary hallmark of a scientific truth. So I'm going to jump around as I do, because if you don't know how in Kindle or on iPad how you can do this. It's really incredible. And normally I can just like scroll down and get these, but I like to see where I had it in the chapter. The scientific method requires that direct observation and measurements be made on the subject of study. In the absence of today's technology, early scientists were restricted to studying, and this is the key to understanding the difference now and then. The key was to studying only things they could see, touch, or measure. And this is really important to understand the merging of science and spirituality. Spirituality, things that we cannot see. The concept of an invisible energy matrix, which modern quantum physicists named the field, and which Einstein later attributed as the sole governing agency of matter, was clearly not accessible to scientific observation at the time of Newton and Descartes. Consequently, the parameters of the scientific method unavoidably limited science to studies of the physical material world. And this is so important because, you know, when you look at our bodies and you decide to replace a part of the body with a mechanical part, it's very different than getting the body's brilliance and intelligence through stem cell treatment to actually change. The parameters of the scientific method unavoidably limited science to studies of the physical material world. This is a really important statement. By narrowing its focus of study and determining that non-material concepts such as spirit and mind, non-material concepts, spirit and mind, were outside the box of analytical science, science officially acquired the status of scientific materialism, which is what we're dealing with in modern medicine, which they go into in great, really interesting detail. As a result, science considered such elements of the invisible realm to be metaphysical notions, which were happily left to the church and were not subjected to the rigid laws of physical science. By detaching from the beliefs of the church and narrowing their observations to the physical, tangible universe, scientists initiated a new philosophy. Rather than viewing the universe as controlled by spiritual forces, scientists pursued the notion that the universe was a physical machine. To them, the plants, stars, the planets, and animals were merely mechanical gears in a giant clockwork mechanism. While scientists supported the notion that God created the machine, they also believed that once the machine was set in motion, God was no longer personally involved in its day-to-day operation. Rather than imagining God hovering above the world and controlling it like a marionette with spiritual strings, science perceived the universe as a perpetual motion machine that reflected the behavior of its mechanical parts. Sir Isaac Newton used mathematics to scientifically verify and solidify Descartes' premise that the universe was a machine. So I'm going to skip some pages. Materialism, physical matter, is, since the 1700s, three of the main tenets of Newtonian philosophy that shaped how science approached the universe. One, materialism, physical matter is the only fundamental reality. The universe can be understood through knowledge of visible physical parts. And I'm bringing this up because if you are stuck in this belief that it's only the material, only visible, what we see is real, is the truth, we're very much limited. And the beauty of this and the beauty of the T-touch and the 1 1/4 circle and the concept of imagining the circle and putting the numbers on it, that activates the whole brain so that we are actually, and they talk about this in this book at some point, the left and right parts of this whole concept, the knowledge and the knowing, you know, that we've already heard about in our course from Michael Rhodes in his book, Entering the Secret Garden, the Secret World of Nature, which we'll be also studying. This materialism, this reductionism, no matter how complex something appeared, it can always be dissected and understood by studying its individual components. Simply stated, to understand something, take it apart and study its pieces. And I love the way they write about this because Steve Barman is also known as the cosmic comedian, and he has really funny, fascinating ways of stating things. And the third of this Newtonian science Darwinian concept is determinism. Occurrences in nature are causally determined. A consequence of the concept that every action produces a reaction. An outcome can be predicted by the linear progression of discrete events. Simply stated, we can predict and control the outcome of natural processes. Newtonian materialism, reductionism, and determinism offered not merely an analysis of the universe, but also the promise of a controllable utopia. The price? The thinking world would have to sacrifice its preoccupation with God, spirits, and invisible forces. Somewhere between the time of Newton in the early 1700s and the Age of Enlightenment in the late 1700s, tensions eased between the upstart paradigm of modern science and the still dominant church-controlled monotheistic paradigm. By conveniently dividing the universe into a material realm and spiritual realm, science ruled the physical world and religion took domination over the metaphysical world. Therefore, science was free to pursue its proof of the material nature of the universe, and religion still guided the course of transcendent souls. While there was a convenient truce between two intellectual superpowers, the resulting separation of spirit and matter, has led to an imbalance that continues to endanger our world today.
Can you reread that last sentence? That's, I think, so powerful.
The science was free to pursue its proof of the material nature of the universe, and religion still guided the course of transcendent souls. While that was a convenient truce between two intellectual superpowers, science and religion, the resulting separation of spirit from matter has led to an imbalance that continues to endanger our world today. As the 19th century neared a close, the entire material universe rested comfortably on a foundation of irrefutable Newtonian truth. And I'm telling you, I've heard really intelligent people say, well, quantum physics, quantum science is just a, what do they call it? Fake science. No, it's not fake science. What the word? Pseudoscience. And it's just because we have to forgive them because they haven't been reading. And the first time this really came out, what quantum science was about was 1975 with Fritjof Capra's The Tao of Physics. That was the first time. I happened to be at Esalen during those times and there was discussion of this, but I didn't grok it. You know, I heard about it, but I didn't know about it. And then Gary Zukav's Dancing Wuli Masters came out and that was exciting. But then we got the field. And if you have not read The Field, put it on your bucket list because Lynn McTaggart brought us the field. That's, you know, in between the stuff that makes up the universe is not just empty space. Holding it all together is a wonderful, rich quantum field out of which emerges in orderly patterns all matter and all energy. Many scientists call this intelligence or consciousness, and the rest of the world calls this God. Deepak Chopra calls it the field of infinite possibilities. Please remember that, infinite possibilities, the key word, infinite possibilities, and says that when we achieve the stillness of the prayer state, that we too help to shape the forms that emerge out of this field. And I believe that the pause in the T-touch between these 1 1/4 circles takes us to that place of stillness that helps us to create and help to shape the changes that we get within the cells. We know it, I know it, as this cellular wisdom that we are now knowing, this divine spark that we know we are tapping into. And divine spark is something I'd like you to, you know, I to me it was a key to the piece of the puzzle that I have been looking for, and that comes from Luc Bodin and Natalie Bodin Lamboy and Jean Graciet in their book, The Book of Ho'oponopono, and we will be getting there because it's a major key to the puzzle. And that statement, that quote that I just gave you, in between the stuff that makes up the universe, that is by Ruth L. Miller in her beautiful tiny little book, which I lost and I've got to get another one, which you can order directly from her. And it's from Wise Woman Press. It's just called Uncommon Prayer. And it is a beautiful, beautiful explanation, an exploration of, in a very simple way, of the effects of quantum science. And I love that little book, and it will be something we'll be coming back to. So Newtonian stuff, man. We gotta, oh, look at this. Oh, here is one of my heroes. Okay, you have to get this. And I want you to hear this. This is worth hearing. Ah, there's so much here. And when they're talking about the mechanical stuff and the Nobel Prize, and then a funny thing happened on the way to absolute certainty. The mechanistic world was the way it was. Demonstrating once again that pride goeth before the fall, unanticipated anomalies began to turn the world of Newtonian physics upside down. The first crack in the mechanical worldview came in 1895 with investigations by German physicist Wilhelm Conrad Röntgen of X-rays, which demonstrated the existence of a mysterious force that emanates from matter and penetrates other matter. Subsequently, French physicists Anton Becquerel and Pierre Curie discovered the phenomenon of radioactivity, which revealed that atomic elements are not immutable as presumed, but that fundamental elements could, in fact, transmute into other elements. I'm sorry if this is maybe a little technical and a little boring. Just put it in your back pocket, because it leads us to where we are today. So you can kind of ignore that. I shouldn't have read that to you, because it's, yeah. So it goes on, you know, about the discoveries. And here, while studying the spectrum, this is really important for us, because it's one of the major, major influences on me, on the T-touch. While studying the spectrum of light emitted by heated elements, German physicist Max Planck discovered that electrons could jump from one energy shell of the atom to another shell. Jump the atoms. Going instantaneously from one energy level to another without expressing immediate energy values. So I'm going to jump that, because it's kind of, I'm going to just leave you with Max Planck. Bless his buttons, because he brought us such important information, and it was at Max Planck Institute that led me to Dr. Fritz Albert Popp, and this Dr. Popp's statement when I did one, you know, little session of T-touch on him. This is activating the communication between the cells. So In 1905, studies on the photoelectric effect by German physicist Albert Einstein showed that, you know what, this is going to be too boring. Never mind, it's too much detail. I'm just going to leave you with this because some of you, unless you're really into Einstein, which I happen to be, but you don't need to be, don't worry about this. So let's stop it with this, because this concept of the shift that started to happen where Newtonian science was disproved was really starting to change our world.
Can I say something going back to the space between matter and the what you started to talk about in terms of that description of that place of stillness where infinite possibilities takes place? Yes. So Barbara Brennan, right, talks about that place as the black velvety void. It's where everything emerges from that place and where creation actually is in motion. And it's also that place where you can go into incredible stillness and bring that through. And that pause, in the mindful pause, right?
One of our nine elements.
One of our nine elements, exactly, is so amazing. And we keep coming back to it. I know that because it's so important. And one of the things that we don't necessarily think of as related, but Joan King talks about it in her book in terms of in chapter two at the end, she's talking about turning on and turning off,
yes.
You know, and going into creating space. She also talks about your personal rhythm. I talk about that with people all the time, like finding out what your natural rhythm is because we have so many things going on. The last paragraph, she says, take a moment.
What page?
Sorry, page 50. Yep. At the bottom, she says, well, she talks about allowing her body to find its daily natural rhythm. I haven't heard anybody else say that besides me, because I've been talking about that with my clients for myself for like 20 years. And she says, take a moment to take stock of your own daily, weekly, seasonal, or annual patterns. Ask yourself what you can do to create the time and space for quiet periods each day, each week, each year. Realizing that times of quiet are wells of nourishment that can bring insight and harmony into your life, and make a commitment to explore ways to bring these periods into your life. Be creative. So all the stuff that I talk about in terms of creative art journaling or journaling, those you can use that. Like I use that as a way to help me go into that quiet place to help focus my brain on something besides looping thoughts, you know, doing body blessing. I come out of my morning meditation and body blessing and doing all of that, and I go into journaling and creative art journaling specifically to help access those states and to lift me into a higher state, literally a vibration, by what I'm focusing on. And so I just love that she talks about this, and to be creative, insightful, imaginative, and considering how you can do this and rekindle your passion. And honoring the dynamics of cellular wisdom. I think we just don't look at that connection in those ways, but it's all part of the same. It's all completely, totally linked. It's saying, talking about it from different perspectives, the same thing from different perspectives. I just love it. It's so exciting.
This is so beautiful. By honoring the on-off dynamics of cellular wisdom will allow you to mobilize your life energies to create, relate, and live exuberantly. I love that. That's the second time she's used that word. Only then can you resonate with the vibrant pulsing of life. And that's why this is such a brilliant book, because it merges, it merges the concept, the understanding of the cellular genius with ways to actually create the world and the lives that we create. And that's why we wanted to bring you these books. And we are right on the 6 o'clock, and we said that we would end because you have a client. Mm-hmm. And it's thank you all for being here with us. And I really hope that, you know, this book will bring you as the blessings that is already brought to me. And let's close with a heart hug. And give thanks, to Gene King and to Bruce Lipton and Steve Barman for these two books. And for all of you and for all of our 90 plus people now who are in our 90-day immersion, that we are creating this world and validating each one of us and what each one of us has been feeling. And this time together brings me to a great place of deep, deep love and appreciation. Blessings.
Let me unmute everybody so we can all say goodbye.
Right.
Or you can unmute yourselves. Unmute all. Okay, yeah. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you, Sandy. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Linda. It's awesome.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Ciao.
Hey, Mentai.